you're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Do you want to sing the song again?
It's fine. I'm loving it. The vibes here, you know, always electric. So shout out to the fans here. We got that win for them.
I saw you talking to Daenerys directly after the final out. What are you telling him in that moment?
Well, just refreshing him, you know, like just telling him how good he is and how good we are, and just giving him that confidence that he needs, you know, like execute stuff, and he did it right there. You know, he took he got the three outs and we got that win.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Taylor McGregor talking with Miguel Amaya in the post game yesterday on the Marquee Sports Network, and we're delighted to welcome Taylor to the program. She joins us now on the Score Hotline. Taylor, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I am great. How are you?
Well, that was a great win yesterday, and I think everyone feels almost a sense of relief. You know, it's just good to put a couple wins together, and who knows? You know, you're playing the Brewers, and we heard from Jed yesterday. Like to see a winning streak before making any determination about maybe getting a player in here on a one-year deal. I think that's a good start. Last I checked, you can't really put together winning streaks without winning the first game of a series. So it was an excellent, excellent result for the Cubs.
Absolutely. You know, and it's, for me, I think, so much back to last season and how the Cubs were in a very similar spot. They went on this winning streak, and then at the end of September, they're right there. So the hope certainly is to duplicate that in a way. We'll just have to see how the next week plays out.
Taylor, you were front and center, as you always are, when Jed Hoyer was speaking. I just wondered, based on the fact that we're a week away from the trade deadline, and he was pretty declarative and definitive about what the Cubs aren't planning to do, which is going out and adding to this year's team. How surprised were you to hear that?
I wasn't surprised. I think you have to be smart. You have to make good decisions. And, yeah, right now, the right decision is to not add for 24. To not add solely for 24, I should say. So I wasn't really shocked by that. And look, like, the reality with this club is they haven't played as good as they needed to in order to get pieces added at the deadline. And I still think there's hope that they can regress to the mean and in a positive way. This, it doesn't even make sense how bad this offense has been, given the fact that it's essentially the same team back. You add Michael Busch, you add Shota to the pitching production, like, they should just be better than they are. And so the hope is maybe in this, you know, these next 60 games, they can showcase that.
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of what Jed is really saying, isn't it? That this team needs improvement from the players here, and that, you know, when you're talking about a $236 million plus payroll, you're talking about a team that should have enough to be able to win, and you don't want to put money on that unless you feel like you're getting the payoff from what you're getting. And I thought it made perfect sense what he had to say.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Again, you have to make smart decisions. And as a fan, of course, you want to add and you want to be given a chance to play deep into October, but the reality is it's just not the way the season's gone, and so you have to be smart, and you have to make decisions that can be challenging right now, but they're what's best for the club in years to come.
Why did Javier Assad struggle to the extent he did, Taylor, last night? 6 walks and 3 1/3. The bullpen really came through in a big way, but what was the post-game explanation or level of concern about Assad?
Yeah, so Assad historically has dealt with walks. That's been a part of his Achilles heel. Now, in the early parts of the season and last year, he's been really good with runners in scoring position. You can't always explain that. Why is he good out of the stretch? We don't know. But what we've seen as of late is he's let those walks come back to bite him, and he's walking at a higher rate, too. When I was talking to Tommy Hotovy before the game yesterday, there have been some mechanical things that they've been working on with him. They feel like when he starts to get fatigued, he gets really big in his movements, and because of those big movements, almost trying to overcompensate for the fatigue, he loses his command. And the reality is he doesn't have elite stuff. He has to be able to command that fastball, you know, glove side fastball. And he has been leaving some of those sinkers over the plate, and it's hurt him, especially with the walks on, with the guys on base from the walks. So I think there is a little bit of a level of concern, but I think you always try to go back to the bigger body of work, and the bigger body of work has shown that, you know, he can be a successful major league pitcher. It's just getting back to really honing in on the command, and I think the mechanical things are where they're trying to focus right now.
Merriweather activated yesterday. That's got to be good. I was saying the other day that I really appreciate how much they've improved in the bullpen over the last few weeks, and I was scoffed at because we don't know yet. We haven't been winning, and wait until they start winning, and then we're going to find out that the bullpen isn't improved, but it feels improved.
Yeah, well, the numbers over the last several weeks prove that for sure. And listen, like, they've played in tough games. Like, Baltimore's a really good offense. They're the best offense in baseball, and they were able to silence those hitters. So I do think it's fair to say, yes, the bullpen has improved, and they've shown that they can get outs against really good hitters. I've been really impressed with some of the young guys who've come up and made the most of their opportunities. I'm Porter Hodge. He gave up the homer last night, but he's been really encouraging. When he has his command locked in, like, that guy's got nasty stuff and welcome stuff in the bullpen. Obviously, Julie Merriweather was one of the Cubs' most trusted relievers down the stretch a year ago, so to have him back is a huge boost. You can never have too many good arms down there. But I think overall they've found some pieces that they really like, and the numbers the last several weeks have shown that, you know, good things are happening.
What is the latest on Cody Bellinger, and how long before do you think he returns?
So he has been taking swings in the cage. He's expected to hit on the field today. The bat has gone better than the throwing. He's having a little pain still, gripping a baseball, throwing a baseball. So I think you're still a couple weeks away. I could see a situation where he comes back first as a DH, of course. But I think, you know, beginning of August was sort of the hope. I do know, and Craig Counsell said this yesterday, that they were really encouraged by the work in the cage over the weekend. They felt like it went better than expected. So I don't have an exact timeline, but better than expected is always good news. So let's hope in the next couple weeks he is back.
Yeah, I'm intrigued by that idea that he could come back as a DH until he's gripping the ball, the bat better. I mean, you need that guy. He's like one of the big threats in the lineup.
Yeah, I love what Craig Counsell always says when guys are on the injured list. Like, you don't replace good players, your best players, with better players. Like, there's nobody they can call up from the minor leagues who's going to be better than Cody Bellinger. Like, you need him in your lineup for it to be the best that it can possibly be. So the Cubs need him back. There's no question about it. And, of course, the biggest story we've all been talking about is they have struggled to score runs. And without him, it's made it even more challenging.
Enjoyed your post-game interview with Miguel Amaya. Certainly asking about the song again was funny. And also just the way he handled himself was good. It's nice to see him smiling and interacting, Taylor. I wonder, has he turned the corner? You don't want to get too carried away. He's been better since they benched him, but they still need a lot of production from that position. And neither Craig Council nor Jed Hoyer has been shy in expressing that.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I'll first start with the production. I mean, you just look at the 8 and 9 hole from the Cubs this year. It's been amongst the worst in baseball. And look, the guys at the top of the lineup are not having bad years. Like, Ian Happ's having a good year. Nico Hoerner's having about a little below his career year. Cody Bellinger's having a good year. Like, Michael Bush is having a phenomenal year. But they just aren't having these MVP-type seasons to make up for the lack of production at the bottom of your lineup. And you can't have these black holes where these rallies just go to die at the bottom of your lineup. And that's kind of what we've seen through the first 100 games. So if they can get more production from the catcher position and Miguel Amaya, like, that's going to change the offensive dynamics so much. I'm always the first to say small sample, and the reality is it's a very small sample. It's only been about 2 weeks since Miguel was benched, given some time off to make that mechanical adjustment, sort of reset mentally. But since I did this report last night, again, small sample, but the OPS is like 1,300. He's hitting the ball hard. He's taking his walks like he did last night. So I think the quality of that bat is there. The biggest thing for him was just timing. And with that leg kick, I mean, we're seeing it around the game for a while now. Like, you just don't see really good hitters with big leg kicks. The velocity is too high in the game right now. And so for him to cut back on that, get a little bit of his timing back on track, let's hope that what we've seen the last couple weeks can continue. Because if it can, I think the offensive output overall will improve.
How, like, when you're doing one of these post-game interviews, how do you handle it if there's, like, an attempt at drowning? Like, you know, Nico Hoerner hit a home run. Oh, my mother of God. It was like guys just kept running back and getting more water and throwing water. And he had the double bubble hat on at one point, which is hilarious. But how do you handle that?
How distracting.
In terms of, well, but I mean, you're seeing it coming. You're trying to do an interview. You got to, you know, I'm sure you don't want to get drenched if that happens. I just, that was one of the weirder ones.
Yeah, I always say embrace the chaos. Look, there's 162 games. Some of them stink. Some of them are really fun, and you have to really soak up the really fun moments. And the walk-offs are always so much fun. It is challenging sometimes to, like, get any sort of answer with substance when they're trying to avoid the shower, you're trying to avoid the shower. Nobody really knows when the drenching's going to stop, but I just say lean in, because you don't get a ton of those throughout the year, and so always make the most of the ones that you do get.
You literally soak it in.
Soak it in.
Yeah. So, Taylor, also, along those lines, we saw Craig Council snap at Jesse Rogers the other day, get a little testy with somebody who he knows well, and I'm just curious, that's expected. You have been around long enough to know that does happen from time to time. It doesn't necessarily reflect poorly on either guy. It was a question he didn't like, and he answered it as he did. Has that happened to you with Craig Council covering the Cubs? You're around there as much as anybody. Just wondered, in your role, how have you handled previous situations if you've encountered those?
I have not experienced that yet with Craig. But look, like, there's emotions that can run high in a season. And yes, there can be questions that rub people the wrong way. I had one with David Ross. And look, I enjoyed working with Rossi. I still really love David Ross. I just think he's a wonderful human, but he snapped at me a little bit because of the way that I asked about Kyle Hendricks after Kyle was hurt. I said, like, how's Kyle feeling after he had come out of the game? And he didn't like the way that I framed that question. I went to him after and I was like, well, how did you expect me to frame that question? I didn't think there was anything wrong with it. You know, we talked it out and it was all fine. But it is funny how these emotions just build up and the intensity of a season can be there. And you know, a question that was not asked with the wrong intention can appear to be asked with a certain type of intention. So that happens. It happens to everybody. If you've been covering this sport long enough, there's probably been some type of interaction like that. And, you know, you learn from it. I think it helps build a relationship because I had a same thing in Colorado with Bud Black, and I went and talked to him about it, and we discussed it, and how can I be better in these moments, and, you know, how can you hear me better in those moments, and that's what makes a relationship go, is you talk through things like that, and it's just kind of part of the everyday grind when you're in an environment where emotions can run high.
Yeah, you know, it's one of these strange seasons for the Cubs where I think that we were anticipating better. They struggled for a period of time there. There's still plenty of time. And as you mentioned, their record going into the All-Star break was exactly the same as it was a year ago. So they can get into contention and the second wild card spot and all that stuff. But there is still this feeling that, and I just wonder how the players wear it. Like the Cub fans are great and there's nothing but excitement at Wrigley. But I just wonder how the players feel when they're underachieving and how you have to sort of manage personalities in order to do your job well.
Well, I think one thing that can be challenging for players is like when they're struggling and the team is struggling. I think that's the kind of aspect of all of this that's the most challenging to deal with from my perspective is like when a guy is going through it, but the team's winning, it's kind of like, all good, we're going to figure it out. But when the two of those are happening together, that's when my job is tough because, you know, I have to be careful in the way that I approach players and what I ask for from them and, you know, a multitude of different things. And that's sort of what I've had to battle all season is like there have been guys who've really gone through it. And in the middle of that, the team is also losing. So, it's challenging. That's one of the hardest parts about my job as the everyday reporter is knowing the different personalities, knowing when to push on certain things, when not to, and just trying to read the room in that way, because it is hard. It certainly is. These guys are human beings. They wear emotions. There's no question about it. And so I have to be kind of smart in how to handle it all.
Well, you do it very well. You really do. And I think that's consistent through since the time you arrived. And Taylor, I wonder, last week there was a surprising story. Seiya Suzuki's interpreter was fired. And I know that somebody who has been around for a while, what effect did that have on the kind of things we're kind of talking about? The temperature in the room, the camaraderie in the clubhouse, does something like that resonate beyond just how it affects Seiya Suzuki?
You know, I don't know. I was gone over the weekend, so it's all relatively new news to me. So I don't think I can answer that like really with any depth because I just don't know. I was only back yesterday. But obviously the Cubs made a decision they felt was the best. And so we'll just see how it all plays out.
Yeah. We wondered whether like Shota is, for lack of a better word, such a showman and that his personality is, I just wondered if the interpreter or the translator somehow was different based on the personality of the player. In other words, if you're dealing with a guy who's relatively kind of, don't want to say that Seiya is closed off or anything, but he's certainly not the kind of, you know, big personality that Shota is. Is the translator's job easier from what you have to deal with the translator?
Like we see that side of Shota and he's wonderful, but I also think like Seiya's wonderful too. And I would say Seiya's, you know, he does have a really great personality. He can be really funny. So I don't know. I've never lived the life of a translator. I don't know what it would be like to literally follow somebody around 24/7. I think there's probably challenges, challenges for everybody. So I don't know. I really don't know the answer to that.
Great stuff. Taylor, thanks a ton. You do a great job, and we love talking to you. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Taylor.
It.
Hey, good to talk to you guys. Thank you.
That's Taylor McGregor from the Marquee Network. That would be wild, wouldn't it? Following a guy around 20
years. Yeah, I don't think I'd want to do that.
Really?
I don't think I'd want to
even
do that.
With your language skills?
I don't have language skills. I don't.
You speak I'm
doubting
nice
all my skills
English.
This morning. I'm reading the text line.
I speak Southside, so I can translate.
Yes, I can. I'm familiar.
From English to Southside.
I'm starting to get that, you know, a little more. Hey, when we come back, we have a shorter segment. We have Mike Fleury coming at 8:45. I want to ask you about a big story on the front page of the Chicago Tribune this morning that
Excellent.
I think is sports related.
Yeah, I think it's a fun story. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Seven of the score.
Give me.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the score.
Big story in the paper today. Big yeah. story in Chicago yesterday. We talk a lot about stadium projects in the city with the Bears eyeing their new home and the White Sox talking about building one on the 78 in the South Loop. Well, yesterday, the Reinsdorf and Wirtz families got together for a press conference to unveil a proposal that would remake the Near West Side. It's a huge project. It's ambitious. It's expensive. It's called the 1901 Project. And it's going to take about a decade and $7 billion to complete.
Yeah.
$7 billion of development in the city. Danny Wirtz and Michael Reinsdorf were the front and center spokespeople for this. And it's going to be a new neighborhood, and the United Center is going to be the anchor. It's exciting and it's ambitious.
Okay. And I understand that, and I read some of the coverage of it, and I'm fascinated by the idea of taking all the parking lots and using, they've apparently buying up some lots too,
mm-hmm.
and then building, like, it's my understanding you'd have like a green area where underneath it is like a multiple kind of lot.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I don't get. Where does the $7 billion come from? Who's putting the $7 billion into it? Because it's not, they're not asking the government for that money, right? So is it private investors?
Well, it's a privately financed music hall that's included as part of this project, which I think that's answers part of the question. But over 10 years, the $7 billion, it seems as if it was presented, there wasn't a quest to seek public funding. It wasn't so, like that. It seemed like a lot of private investment,
okay.
business investment, development
okay.
in a part of, I think in a part of the city where you trust that there's going to be that anchor already. See, I think the difference with this, and I don't want to pretend to be an expert on business
yeah.
development in the
so,
city.
So the sports stadium is already the
it's
anchor.
It's already there.
The neighborhood.
It's
yes.
not like the 78 where they're building it to be there.
And Madison Avenue on the way out is already being built up, and there are already kind of, if you just drive down the street, there are already restaurants, bars.
The West Loop.
It's gotten a lot
yeah.
nicer
Very
than
nice.
It was in the last 20
no,
years.
No question about it. This, I think, is probably, you can read the story, you can talk to the people surrounding it. It's a continuation of that development, or just a need to understand you need to reinvest in this area because you do already have the anchor tenant, if you will. The United Center is there and doing quite well. So now you build around it, and now it's very ambitious, but it sounds like they want to break ground as early as the first of the year. The sense would be that they will break ground on this project based on what we learned yesterday, based on the projections. They will break ground on this project before the Bears put a shovel in the dirt wherever they're going to build. I'm just saying. That's remarkable.
But the difference is, this is $7 billion, but they're not asking for $2.5 billion, whatever it is.
Okay, so Sierra Boatwright is the commissioner of the Chicago Department of Planning and Development, and I apologize if I mispronounced her first name, C-I-E-R-E, Boatwright. She's quoted in the Tribune story as saying this: there has been no request for financial assistance, and from a land use perspective, this is an exciting opportunity to reverse decades of parking lot expansion and restore the traditional neighborhood development pattern. So that doesn't sound like a quest for public funds. This isn't going in, having your hands out and saying, help us do this. It sounds like it's, we're going to do this.
Yeah, just get out of our way.
Allow us to, do it right. Do it efficiently. And, we're going to start pretty soon. So this is something I didn't see coming this soon. I heard her talks about it, but I didn't think that they would be ready to unveil a plan like this.
Was there talk at one point that Sox build there? I mean, wasn't there kind of that suggestion?
I think there was maybe
it was one of the sites
rumblings. Okay. Maybe rumblings. When you hear the Sox chatter, it's hard to remember exactly where all of the different areas that they were rumored to be going.
Yeah,
Nashville, the South Loop.
There's a disconnect here for me, which is the Reinsdorf family. I get it; they own the building with the Wertzes and the United Center. I understand all that, but why would you want to build up in Chicago if you want to get your baseball team to Nashville? See what I'm saying? And I'm not saying that's what they want, but there's been a long suspicion that the Sox are losing on purpose in order to lose their fan base, in order to take away from those that would not want them to leave.
I don't personally buy that.
Hasn't Jerry said that if he goes, that, Michael's been told to sell the team?
Sell the team. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, I think, written into the will, perhaps, that has been speculated.
But does that mean sell the team and have to anybody who would leave town, or does that mean sell the team and leave it in Chicago?
I would think it would be a shame, and I don't know that that's been, determined. And I think it's impossible to determine that right now. But I think, is this related to the White Sox project in the South Loop? I don't believe so.
Okay.
But I will add this. I don't want to suggest that when I said they're not going seeking public assistance, obviously that wasn't the lead. That wasn't like the presentation at Soldier Field with Kevin Warren and the Bears. Like, we're going to donate this, then we're going to ask for this, and all of a sudden it's like $2 billion in public subsidies that you need.
Exactly.
This could include, Mully.
Yes.
Terry Savarese was saying that this could include the possibility of tapping into the neighboring tax increment financing district, a TIF district, which is often the case, which is a workaround, right?
Of course.
And that could be part of this project moving forward. I think it would be naive to expect it not to be, but there does seem to be a high level of investment privately that seems to be part of this as well.
But whenever you hear of some massive spending project that we're going to start, the shovels we're getting going on, you're always just wondering, well, what is it that you're after? You can't help it. And it's not.
And the devil's in the details.
The natural cynic.
Yeah, definitely. But I think we're in Chicago. We have a right to be cynical. It's inherent that there's some skepticism when there's public building projects or something that involves, yes.
Listen, it'd be great to take advantage of, there's been some building on the west side. There's been the whole restaurant district of heading west. There are already really good restaurants, neighborhoods. There's a lot that you could kind of link together with this project going out in that fashion. I think there's a lot to like about all of it.
The first phase would include a $796 million investment. That's the first phase. It would include the music hall and the new parks. And this is the important part they wanted to stress. I felt like 4,000 construction jobs, 1,900 permanent jobs created as a result of this project. That's where they're looking to get people on board with, this is a good idea. That always helps when you're creating jobs and you're creating development. And there will be, Kevin Warren, there will be cranes, I imagine. There will be cranes.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, I'm all for it. I love that kind of stuff. I love this city, and I want the city to keep building up. But I also, you know, I just wonder what does it really mean?
You want to be responsible. But the United Center is a proven draw.
Sure.
It is an anchor tenant in every sense of the word. That's what they envision the White Sox ballpark being in the 78 with related Midwest involved there.
Yeah.
And so this is a surer thing than that would be, I suppose you could say that, right? Because you're dealing with two franchises who are in front
of
this.
Are already there, yeah.
And the building is already there.
Right. And there is, you know, an opportunity. There's a lot of parking around there that if you're creating a subterranean parking lot and making it a green area on the top of that, that sounds very nice. It does. It sounds wonderful.
The housing that they're going to include, up to 5,000 new units, a mixture of rentals and condos and multiple different phases of the project.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of details that are yet to be released. There's just a lot of excitement surrounding the initial unveiling yesterday. And it's ambitious, $7 billion over the next 10 years.
It's just as you say. I mean, that is like the third major area that we're talking about, the lakefront, the 78, and now the 1901. And then meanwhile, what are you doing with Michael Reese Hospital? How are you going to kind of draw in the Bronzeville area? Like there's a lot of ambition for a lot of projects, and it would be great if you could see them come to fruition and just keep it going. Take the momentum of that and build our world-class city back up to world-class standards.
Yeah, the idealist and everybody would like to see, all right, well, have the Bears build the dome on the lakefront. Oh, okay, have the White Sox build the stadium in this patch of land called the 78. And, oh, by the way, redevelop the area, the near west side, surrounding the United Center. And then we'll all be good in the next 10 years or so.
That sounds magnificent.
Okay.
I just don't know.
How are we paying for that?
I don't know how we're doing that. Yeah. That's all.
It's really ambitious, though. It's fun to consider. And this is probably, of the three projects that we mentioned, this one probably has the best chance of breaking ground the soonest.
Yeah. And, you know, when I hear a music hall, like, I kind of travel back to the 1940s in a way, don't you? I mean, it's just a music hall. Sounds great.
It does sound great. I'm kind of very curious about that.
Is it going to be a big band playing in the music hall?
Is that where the country smokeout will be from now on?
I don't know. It's a good question. All right. We've got Mike Florio is going to join us next. As you mentioned, a lot of teams reporting, a lot of news around the league. We'll get Mike's take on what's going on in Green Bay. Again, it's disappointing. It's not a holdout. It's a hold-in, which implies that they're going to get it solved sooner rather than later. Mike Florio joins us next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Mike Florio, ProFootballTalk.com, NBC Sports, Twitter.com/ProFootballTalk.
Day by day!
Day by day!
We get better and better!
We get better and better!
So we can't beat, beat!
We can't beat, beat!
Boom, beat, beat!
What's up? Get up!
NFL insider Mike Florio with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Mike Florio when he joins us now on The Score Hotline. Michael, good morning. How are you doing?
Doing great. Doing great. How are you guys?
Doing well.
We're kind of hoping that the Jordan Love hold-in could end up being worse than it is, but apparently they're going to pay him and there's no problem and it won't benefit the Bears at all.
Yeah, I think the fact that he's there shows that they're working toward getting this done. The key is always figuring out when the clock strikes 12, because that's when people move to their best position. Because if you move to it before the clock strikes 12, you get squeezed off of it. The hold-in has typically worked. Roquan Smith, one of the rare exceptions where the guy shows up, doesn't practice, and eventually the team has to say, hey, you know, it's time to go. But I expect them to get this deal done with Jordan Love, especially because the head coach, Matt LaFleur, is going to be saying, I got to get ready for this game in Brazil against the Eagles was Sean Clifford and some other guy that I had to look up to make sure he was even a real person.
Mike, is that a Vikings hat you're wearing?
Yeah, you know, here's the problem. during my PFT Live hiatus, I don't like, you know, get my hair properly configured. So I have to grab this hat.
No problem. I like it. It's a cool look. I just want to ask you this because it segues to the Vikings question we were debating earlier this morning. My sense is that you draft J.J. McCarthy where you drafted him. In today's NFL, I'm not sure about how long the apprenticeship should be. I think sooner is better in terms of giving him the keys to the car.
I'm a firm believer if you're going to use a pick that high on any player, you better be ready to play him sooner than later or pick someone who will be ready to play sooner or later. That's the urgency in today's NFL, where every year is its own entity and teams change so dramatically one year to the next. I think the Vikings, what they want to do here, and there was an item from Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com that delved into what their plan was before Kirk Cousins left. They went to Cousins and said, here's what we want to do. We're going to be drafting as high as we ever have. We're never going to be in a position to get the first or second overall pick, ideally, because you don't want to be that bad. But we want to keep you for at least 2024 as the starter and maybe beyond and draft a quarterback. And Cousins wasn't interested in that. And of course, he went to Atlanta. And that's exactly what they did to him in Atlanta. That's what makes that little wrinkle so hilarious. But it tracks with the idea that Kevin O'Connell, who was in Washington when Dwayne Haskins got forced onto the field before he was ready, O'Connell, I believe, wants to ideally see what they can do with Sam Darnold while J.J. McCarthy learns and prepares and gets himself ready to go. Kind of like what the Chiefs did 7 years ago with Patrick Mahomes, although that example does not square for many reasons. I mean, the Chiefs were a perennial playoff team with Alex Smith when they upgraded to Patrick Mahomes and they gave Alex Smith one more year while they got Mahomes ready. But it's this idea, at a time when we don't see it happen very often, it's this idea of being patient with the investment, not rushing them onto the field. How many of these guys get ruined because they get thrust onto the field maybe before they're ready and everything's happening and you freak out and you have a few bad games and it becomes a snowball and the next thing you know, you're Zach Wilson.
Mike, reading this morning, they are talking 18-game schedule. No surprise to anyone, but maybe it happens sooner than later.
Hey, there's nothing like a $14.1 billion Sunday ticket antitrust liability that creates an incentive for both sides here. But I think there's a way that the NFL will explore possibly foisting a chunk of the $14.1 billion onto the players, because the players got paid by this antitrust scam that the NFL was running with Sunday Ticket. And you could argue you've got to pay some of it back if we have to pay all of it back. But even moving forward, whatever they do to rectify the antitrust violation, if they lose on appeal, and they're going to exhaust every appeal, there's too much money at stake here for them not to do it. But if they have to ultimately change their ways and open this up and not overcharge the most passionate fans for Sunday tickets so that most fans will say, I'll just watch the games on my local Fox and CBS affiliate, so the NFL could maximize the revenue from both Sunday Ticket / DirecTV and Fox and CBS. Going forward, the money could drop, the revenue drops, the salary cap drops, the players make less money. So I think it's in everyone's interest to say, let's find a way to make more money, because we're going to have to go back to these networks and negotiate deals. And the more games we have, the more weeks we have, the more windows we have, the more money we make.
Mike, 3 days into Bears practice and training camp, Caleb Williams looks the part. Obviously, here in Chicago, it excites people. Just curious, from your vantage point outside of the city, outside of the Bears, what kinds of things, are you looking for this preseason from Caleb Williams? What kind of things are you listening for from him?
Well, I will not declare him a success until there is breathless reporting that he hasn't thrown an interception for umpteen straight practices. Remember that with Marcus Mariota and the Titans 9 years ago? And that's all meaningless. Look, here's what matters. And we won't know until it's time. What does he do when he's on the field against NFL caliber defenses where the windows are tighter, the players are faster, they're bigger, they're stronger? You've got to make it all work. And then you've got that first few games where they're not quite sure what you're going to do. And maybe Shane Waldron can fool some defenses until there's 4, 5, 6 games of film. And then they start figuring out what he does well, what he doesn't want to do, how they can try to pressure him, how they can try to confuse him. There's a ceiling you have to bust through halfway through that first season. That's when it's all proven. None of this, unless the reporting is that guys are wide open and he's throwing bounce passes to them, that would be cause for alarm. But there's no reason to get excited about any of this, because there are ways, and Chris Sims and I talk about this all the time, and Sims has the experience to back this up. There are ways to design plays in practice that are aimed at creating positive headlines, that are aimed at giving the quarterback a chance to have a big day so people get excited. So none of it matters until you're facing an opponent in a game that counts, week one, and let's see what happens.
Thanks a ton, Mike. Great catching up.
Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
That is Mike Florio. Always fun to talk.
Sweet hat. It's a really nice looking hat.
Well, he grew up a Vikings fan.
Yeah, I know. But it wasn't purple, so it wasn't obvious. It was just nice, a little shade of gray. Nice.
Look at you.
Like it.
You like a nice Vikings hat? What's going on in the world? It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
You're working from home. You settle in with a cup of coffee, ready to get the day started. Before you look at that to-do list, turn on your favorite Odyssey sports station on your smart speaker. We'll keep you company and bring you the latest updates from your teams while you tackle your inbox or get ready for another meeting that probably could have been an email. Power through the workday with the entertaining sports coverage you love from the local voices you trust. Just ask your smart speaker to play your favorite station.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.